This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. See if you try.
First, you've made no doubt about the fact that you are a Christian. You publicly say you're a follower of Christ. What does that mean to you? And how does faith work out in your life on a daily basis? What does it mean to you?
It means I'm saved and forgiven. And we're talking about the world. Our faith encompasses not just the United States of America, but the world.
A whole lot of religion going on in the presidential campaigns. Hello, Freethinkers. We'll be talking about that and much more on Free Thought Radio today. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. Free Thought Radio is a show that's produced by the National Freedom From Religion Foundation. We are the nation's largest organization of freethinkers, atheists, and agnostics. And we work to keep state and church separate and to educate the public about the views of the real fast-growing segment of American public who identify as non-religious.
We're going to talk briefly about that notorious Saddleback presidential forum last weekend, moderated by evangelical pastor Rick Warren in his enormous megachurch in California. Very briefly, because we do have two great guests for today's show, Nebraska Senator Ernie Chambers, an American original and defender of civil liberties. We're going to have an update on how his lawsuit against God is proceeding, a slightly tongue-in-cheek lawsuit, but making some eloquent points.
And our second guest today is the inimitable Katha...
Say that again.
inimitable Katha Paulett, who is the columnist for the magazine called The Nation. And we'll be talking with her about her column of August 18th through 25th, titled Flocking to Faith, about Obama's faith-based plans. And in general, her article talks about religion and the upcoming national conventions of the Democrat and Republican parties.
Speaking of religion and politics, both presidential candidates talked about their faith at the Saddleback Church Presidential Forum televised by CNN last week. And we started the show with John McCain's religious testimonial. Here's Obama's Christian testimonial.
What does it mean to you to trust in Christ? And what does that mean on a daily basis?
Well, as a starting point, it means I believe in that Jesus Christ died for my sins and that I am redeemed through him. That is a source of strength and sustenance on a daily basis.
And now let's listen to McCain and Obama back to back answering Reverend Warren's question on their definition of marriage.
Define marriage.
Union, a union between man and woman, between one man and one woman. That's my definition.
I believe that marriage is the union between a man and a woman. Now, for me as a Christian, for me as a Christian, it's also a sacred union. God's in the mix.
Well, I think that sounds kind of ghastly, God in the mix of a personal marriage. It can't be said too often that the most important domestic power of the U.S. president is to appoint federal and Supreme Court justices. Reverend Warren asked Obama which existing justice on the court he would not have nominated. Barack Obama said Clarence Thomas.
And here's what McCain replied to the same question.
Which existing Supreme Court justices would you not have nominated?
With all due respect, Justice Ginsburg, Justice Breyer, Justice Souter, and Justice Stevens. And by the way, Justices Alito and Roberts are two of my most recent favorites, by the way. They really are. They're very fine. And I'm proud of President Bush for nominating them.
It seems like they both agree with each other that Thomas is not their favorite.
Enough of that. We're going to refreshingly speak now with a public official who supports the separation between church and state, so much so that he challenged paid legislative prayers in the Nebraska Senate as a member of the Senate himself, all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. One of the nation's only out non-religious public officials called the conscience of the Nebraska legislature an advocate who comforts the afflicted and afflicts the comfortable, who single-handedly has assured that Nebraska was the only state in the country not to adopt a religious exemption for parents, allowing them to get out of legal duty to seek medical attention for
and
sick children.
We're talking about none other than Nebraska Senator Ernie Chambers. Welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Senator Ernie Chambers.
It's so good to be here. It's like finding an oasis in the middle of a desert.
Well, how nice.
It's like talking to an old friend.
Thank you.
A year ago, last fall, I think it was, you filed a lawsuit in Nebraska District Court, and it's been in the news again this month. Do you want to tell us who was your rather unusual defendant in that case?
It would be God. And in order for the matter to go forward, I'd have to give some kind of notice to God of the preparations and the proceedings. But I argue that since the court acknowledges God in the oaths they give and so forth, they must recognize that God exists, the attributes of God, which would be all knowledge, all knowing, and omnipresence are everywhere. And such being the case, I wouldn't have to file notice to God like I would an ordinary person. So the action should be allowed to go forward.
So why are you suing God? What did he do?
Well, there are so many things that are laid to God's record by those who claim to worship God that I'm almost sympathetic toward the one that I'm suing. But because of the droughts, the floods, the pestilences, the terror that is inflicted on people all over the earth, the fact that God's representatives claim that even worse things are going to come to fall on people who don't do like they do, I'd ask the court to enter an injunction to stop God from committing these acts and also from making terroristic threats.
Now, we should backpedal for a minute. You're taking this lawsuit to make a couple of points, and one of them is actually the right to file so-called frivolous lawsuits. Isn't that right?
Right, and I don't use the term frivolous. My point, that's what the media called it. My point is that under the Nebraska Constitution, the doors of the courthouse must be open to everybody, and my philosophy is that everyone must have his or her day in court, no matter how reviled and hated the individual is or how contemptible the cause seems to be in the minds of others. Everybody must have his or her day in court. Little Orphan Annie, just as well as Daddy Warbucks.
And you've said anybody can file a lawsuit against anybody, even God.
Yes, and I demonstrated it. And that's what this is, an object lesson in how the courts and the judiciary function.
Okay, but you're a non-believer. How can you sue somebody that you don't believe exists?
Well, there's a term. In this society, people always have to label an individual. So if you don't believe like the Christians believe, the handy term they use is atheist. I've been called atheist, agnostic, non-supernaturalist. I don't apply a label to myself, but I don't believe these things that other people believe. I don't believe there's any supernatural force that intrudes into the affairs of human beings to change anything. And my principles are based on what I must do based on what I think is right, not because of a promise of heaven or fear of something like hell.
So you're having a lot of fun with this lawsuit, trying to make a point. Even though you don't believe in God, you think even someone you don't believe in has the right.
Well, I don't even say that, because that puts them in a position to attach a label. I tell them, I don't know what exists, I don't know what doesn't exist, but I don't believe like you all believe, and my conduct demonstrates it. But what I did say in my argument, not only am I seeking my day in court, but it gives God a day in court also. I don't think religion has anything to do, nor should it have anything to do with the government or the operation of the government.
Hear, hear. Now, before we talk about what's going on with your lawsuit lately, could we talk a little bit about the complaint really lays out very well the problems with these acts of God. You make 9 claims for relief.
Mm-hmm.
And could we maybe read a couple of them and have you comment on it, Dan?
Sure.
Do you want to read that first claim?
Count 1?
Yeah.
Defendant has made and continues to make terroristic threats of grave harm to innumerable persons, including constituents of plaintiff, whom plaintiff has the duty to represent.
You must have what is called standing in order to get an action taken up by the court. And standing is based on having an interest which is going to be harmed by the one you sue. So, as a representative, I have an obligation to come to the aid of those who suffer from these terroristic threats. And people do constantly say in my district and other places that they're going to go to hell, that God's going to kill their children, God's going to kill them if they don't do what God tells them to do. So that is the basis of the allegation of the terroristic threats, plus the fact that preachers, even in my district, will go to what they call the Word of God and read off all these horrendous things that are going to befall the people in my district, and I want that kind of terrorization to stop.
Well, that leads us to count two, Dan. Why don't you read that?
Count number two, a defendant directly and proximately has caused fearsome floods, egregious earthquakes, horrendous hurricanes, terrifying tornadoes, pestilential plagues, ferocious famines, devastating droughts, genocidal wars, birth defects, and the like.
All of those things can be found in the headlines of the day-to-day newspapers, so I think they speak for themselves. And when people ask me, how can I make God responsible for these things that happen, I tell them that nothing happens without God willing it, if God is what they say God is.
And they also can find those in the very book that God supposedly wrote. He did those things back then.
Right, and there was one genocidal war where God ordered them to kill every living thing, so or spread salt over the ground so nothing will grow again. So there's the genocidal war in the Bible itself.
I think we have time for count four, is it, Dan? You want to read that?
Count four, defendant has directed said chroniclers to assemble and disseminate in written form said admissions throughout the earth in order to inspire fear, dread, anxiety, terror, and uncertainty in order to coerce obedience to defendant's will.
Under the law, they say that when a person makes admissions against his or her own interest, those admissions can be allowed in court. And since these admissions are found in what purports to be the actual word of God, they can be entered in against God, and they stand and speak for themselves.
And you also, in your complaint, go after, as you say, the so-called hand-picked men of God,
mm-hmm.
who are disseminating these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us how that works.
Well, all of these different religions, cults, denominations, and so forth have individuals who swear that they have had direct communication with God. God has told them to say and do these things. Therefore, they are God's agents. But because there are so many of them and they differ in what they say, I cannot be required to accept or select the one or the some that really are what they purport to be. So I will accept what they say against the one they represent, but I'm not required to notify any of them of what I'm doing.
There'd be a lot of them, wouldn't there?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We're talking with Nebraska Senator Ernie Chambers about why he is suing God. Yes, there is still a case pending against God in Nebraska District Court.
Free Thought Radio will be back in just a moment to talk some more with Ernie Chambers about his iconoclastic, historic career in the Nebraska State House. Also coming up, Katha Paulett of The Nation, who will talk with us about her concerns about the embrace by both parties and the leadership of the so-called faith-based initiative and the increasing union of religion and politics. But first, this commercial break.
My name is Nick Sheridan, and I'm from Baltimore, and I've been an atheist since I was 13, since I woke up, and I listen to Free Thought Radio. Hope you do too.
Church, this is the steeple. Open the doors. Get in there, you atheist.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. Free Thought Radio is back. We're delighted to have on the phone with us from Nebraska its most illustrious state legislator, Ernie Chambers. And before we continue to talk about your lawsuit against God and what's going on in the courts with that, you have been term limited out of office. How much longer do you have in the Nebraska Senate?
Until January the 6th. Of 2009, then I'm out of the legislature.
And how many years was it?
38, but it seems sometimes like 10, others like 100.
Well, you still have time to do some damage.
Oh, yeah, they call it damage. Their damage is my good. And I'm working just as hard now as I did when I had 3 or 4 years remaining.
Oh, we're softly sorry about that.
Do you know how to type, Ernie?
Well, yeah, I get by.
Yeah, because maybe we could hire you at our office for something.
Oh, I couldn't work for anybody. My disposition and temperament are so wild and unruly that I wouldn't be a good employee.
Oh, well, you're doing a great job of what you are doing. So, so with this lawsuit, apparently it's still in the courts then. It was in the news last week that it hasn't been dismissed.
No.
And why don't they just claim executive privilege? You can't sue the president who's in office. Why doesn't God just say, hey, you can't sue me while I'm God, you know?
Well, see, in America, if you threaten to kill the president, you go to jail. If you threaten to kill God, nothing happens. So obviously they exalt the president above their God.
So why wasn't this just thrown out of court or dismissed?
Well, because I have kept it within the bounds of what the Constitution allows, the Nebraska statutes, and the rules of court, so they cannot just throw it out. The subject matter is not a sufficient basis to dismiss it, and I've done enough things in accordance with the rules to prevent them from throwing it out on procedural grounds.
Well, it's really a wonderful lawsuit. When you read your complaint, and I haven't read, is your argumentation, is that up online somewhere we can read?
I'm not sure, but I will mail that to
you,
plus a transcript of the proceeding.
Well, it's a wonderful, you
can... You know what I have to say about this? I'm having so much fun that it has to be a sin.
Well, there you go.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. We've just been speaking with one of our favorite freethinkers, Nebraska Senator Ernie Chambers.
We'll be back in a few minutes to talk with another favorite freethinker, Katha Pollitt, author and columnist of Subject to Debate in The Nation magazine about all this religion by presidential candidates.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. It ain't necessarily so.
We got to fight the battle of church and state, church and state, church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state, over the wall come a tumbling down.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and our next guest is a good guest to have this week because August 26th, coming up, is Women's Equality Day. And we're very pleased to have back on our broadcast the nation's terrific columnist and commentator, Katha Pollitt. And we're going to be talking about Katha's current column, Flocking to Faith, which dissects what's wrong with Barack Obama's plan to keep the so-called faith-based initiative, but just rename it the Faith-Based Council.
So welcome back to Free Thought Radio, Katha.
Oh, hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's always fun having you on the show. Your voice is always so cheerful in spite of all the problems that are going on in the world. So.
Well, I won't comment on that.
We did talk a little bit about Obama's faith-based plan a couple of weeks ago, but you wrote a wonderful column in the August 18th through 25th issue of The Nation. And what are we going to do?
Katha, I think you're willing to read it, aren't you?
Yeah, I'd love to read it.
That would be great.
It's called Flocking to Faith. In the old days, politicians would slip preachers some hundreds under the table, and preachers would deliver the flock on election day. It was borderline illegal, but at least it left the Constitution alone. The same could not be said of the Bush administration's faith-based initiative, a political bribe to the religious right that put a hole in the First Amendment big enough for Christ himself to walk through. Given the dismal results of the initiative, millions wasted, many lawsuits, embarrassments like special Christians-only prison units, and Faith Works, which aspired to bring, quote, homeless addicts to Christ, unquote, you would think getting rid of federal handouts to churches for social services would be one change we'd all be ready to believe in. But no. As he announced earlier this summer, Barack Obama plans to open the spigot even wider, beginning with $500 million for summer classes for 1 million poor kids, and presumably moving on to help for prisoners, addicts, and other unfortunates. Perhaps worn down by years of being bashed as elitists ignorant of the real America, many liberals and progressives seem prepared to go along. Difficult as it is to dissent from the feel-good community spirit in which Obama casts his proposals, who wants to be the curmudgeon while people are in obvious need? This is a major failure of nerve. Obama may have given his initiative an inclusive-sounding name, the President's Council for Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships, and he may insist that with proper oversight, government money can go to religious institutions without going to religious purposes, like proselytizing. He wouldn't let churches discriminate in hiring for these programs or provide services only to their own, although the Supreme Court permits religious discrimination in church hiring, even for janitorial jobs. He says churches will have to obey their state's anti-discrimination laws, which would mean that in 20 states, churches that consider homosexuality an abomination would have to hire gays anyway. It would be hard to overestimate the amount of bureaucratic energy required to enforce these provisions. Besides, money is fungible. A grant for the prison ministry that never mentions Jesus frees up that many dollars for Sunday school or a new car for the reverend. Although Obama stresses his determination to help, quote, the smallest storefront churches and mosques, unquote, apply for funding, in real life, the religious organizations with the bureaucratic know-how and political connections to go after the money will be the same ones as under Bush. Much of the funding, then, will still go to socially conservative white Christians. Indeed, that's the point, as analysts acknowledge when they cite the measure as part of Obama's attempt to win over this largely Republican demographic. He's not going to win their votes by cutting them out in favor of inner-city mini-mosques. In fact, it doesn't look like he's going to do it at all. Despite the God talk, Obama's polling only 22% of the white angelical vote, which is exactly what the notoriously religiously tone-deaf John Kerry got in 2004. Of course, winning votes isn't the only reason Obama favors faith-based funding. He also says that our problems are, quote, too big for government alone to solve, unquote. So, quote, we need an all-hands-on-deck approach. I'm all for volunteering, but tell me again why we've given up on the idea of publicly providing people with the services they need. In other wealthy industrialized countries, children learn to read in school, not the church basement. Poor families get income supports that enable them to buy their own groceries. They don't have to eat in soup kitchens. Why does Obama want to subsidize churches rather than beef up our frayed public realm? Every dollar that goes to a faith-based program is a dollar that doesn't go to a cash-starved public service, to libraries, Head Start, community mental health clinics, and so on. Obama's right that our problems are very big, but that's an argument against giving money to churches. For instance, Obama mentioned the good work religious folk are doing to rebuild New Orleans. I don't mean to take away from their dedication and accomplishments, but volunteers using their vacations to rehab houses is not going to bring that city back to life. By exaggerating what religious organizations can accomplish, Obama is continuing the belittling of government that was such a major theme of the Bush administration, and for the same reason, fully funding the kinds of programs needed to achieve the goals of the faith-based initiative, ending poverty, for example, would require a ton of money and a much deeper rethinking of our national priorities than Obama or the Democratic Party is willing to embrace. About that pesky separation of church and state, Obama says he wants to ramp up church provision of social services because the churches know the people best. I'd question whether they even know their own parishioners best. Quick, Pastor, how many gays are in your choir? How many women in the pews have had those abortions you sermonize against, let alone the larger community? And what about the 16% found by a Pew survey to be atheists, agnostics, or, quote, nothing in particular, unquote? Are they any less capable of doing good on the government's dime? You'd never know it, but the number of God-free Americans already more than Episcopalians, Presbyterians, Congregationalists, Mormons, all the black churches, Jews, and Muslims put together is growing. In fact, another round of faith-based funding scandals might be just what we need to put us right up there with the born-agains.
Well, that's Flocking to Faith, Katha Pollitt reading her column, which is in the current, well, I guess the next Nation has just come out, but this is the August 18th to 25th. Well, thank you so much for writing, not just reading that column. But what are we going to do about all this religion and politics, Katha?
Well, you know, it's funny. As I was reading this, I was thinking, wait a minute here. I'm really for Obama. You know, so I don't want anyone out there in the audience to to get discouraged about supporting him, because, you know, he's running to be president of the whole country and not just president of the people who think like we do.
And we have to interrupt and say that Free Thought Radio is totally apolitical and nonpartisan.
Right.
Our guests
course.
Can have their
right.
opinion.
Okay. But so I understand how you know, he wants to make a bridge to believers and to believers and even to believing conservatives. I don't think it's such a it's going to work. But I also don't think that this is a reason not to support him. I think it's really, really important to support him.
But still, no one's above criticism, you know.
No, and nobody's perfect.
And any government official who is violating the Constitution should be called to task on that.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, the Freedom From Religion Foundation has done such wonderful work with bringing their lawsuits. I think it's really important. I think, you know, the idea of a faith-based prison, I mean, give me a break, you know, where the Christians all get to live together and get special privileges. That's not right. It's not right.
And it's not that we're opposed to those private religious ministries doing their work. Just do it on their own dollar.
Exactly.
It's like what Franklin said. If they have to go begging the government to do their ministry, then they're failing in their job.
Well, that's a very good point. And I do feel that we're seeing such a defunding of so many of just the basic services that government is supposed to perform, whether you look at healthcare or whether you look at the schools. And I don't think that religious institutions can fill that gap. I don't think they can ever ramp up, you know, that far. And I don't think they should be expected to do that.
But I also just wonder at the efficacy of the Democrats embracing the Republican faith-based initiative and, you know, having the interfaith prayer they're going to have on Sunday at the Democratic National Convention. Is this really going to win over who they think it will win over?
Well, I think their idea is more than that Christian conservatives will see how great Barack Obama is. It isn't that. It's that they're hoping that it will peel away some votes, but also it will avoid enraging the religious to the extent that they perform the kind of mobilization that they did in 2004.
Yeah, boy, I think that values vote polling was way off kilter. And I think it's the Republicans who've been saying over and over again, Democrats, you have to get the values vote. I don't think Democrats should be taking advice from their enemies.
Well, I think that's a good point. And I think, you know, it is, it doesn't feel so good to be taken for granted, does it? It doesn't feel
no.
so good to have the, you know, the people that never vote for you, be the people that you go after, and the people that, you know, that have been with you all the way are the people who are supposed to just sort of, well,
put
all
up
right,
with it.
All right, we'll put up with that. But the truth is that I think is a little bit the way the forces on the ground are arrayed. I would like to see the Democrats make a much bigger push for the people who haven't been voting because they don't see that there's anything in it for them. Because actually there is, the Democrats would be much, much better.
I'm Dan Barker here with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. We're talking about all this overwhelming religion and politics, the interfaith prayer schedule for the Democratic Convention, the parent support for faith-based initiative. We're talking with the nation's columnist, feminist and atheist, Katha Paulett.
Hi, my name is Sue from Cross Plains, Wisconsin, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
And we're back. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we're talking with columnist Katha Paulett of The Nation about her recent column, Flocking to Faith, lambasting Obama's stated intention to continue the faith-based initiative, and about all of this mixing of religion and politics.
So, Katha, your column is a great statement. But what do you think listeners who are concerned about public officials genuflecting, you know, before the electorate like this should be doing to, you know, convey their distress about the fact that we're really getting far away from civil politics when we get into all of this religion?
Well, I think they should make their views known in every way that they can. I think it's really good to write letters to newspapers, remind them that, you know, the non-faith-based are out there. I think they should get in touch with Democratic and also Republican officials. I think, you know, the blogosphere is a tremendous resource. I think, you know, post on popular blogs that have a readership where people will see it.
It does
seem
like...
Call up radio stations, call up radio programs. I think, you know, I think especially in a lot of the country, people are really kind of afraid to speak out.
Yeah. And I think that the politicians are afraid because they just think there's this huge column of religious right people, and if they don't pander, then they can't get elected.
Yes, but sometimes that's true.
Yeah, but as your article points out, your very last paragraph, the dynamics are changing, and maybe what we're seeing today is something of an artifact of back when the religious right was bigger and more powerful and less fragmented. And now, as your article points out, we seculars are growing in numbers, and it may be someday we'll look back and laugh at politicians' need to genuflect the religious right.
Well, I just want to know, I guess I've said this before, is who is wooing the secular vote? I wouldn't just vote for someone because they're wooing us, but why don't they care about that, what, up to 16%, 50 million Americans? As you said in your column, so many more freethinkers than Jews, Muslims, and so on.
I think that's a very interesting question. I think you should have some party officials on and ask them that question.
I don't think they would come on.
I think, well, they might.
That's an interesting thought.
It's a very interesting question. I mean, possibly it's that people who are non-religious vote on many issues, right?
Right.
But there is a core, the thing is there is a core of religious voters where that's their big thing.
But I don't think it's bigger than, I mean, I know that the 16% of non-religious Americans may not vote all as one block, but I don't think the core of religious right voters is, I think I've heard 14% of the truly, you know, super right.
Yeah, but if you have 14% of the electorate that will only vote for a believing Christian, then a believing Christian has that advantage. Whereas the 16% that is non-believing, they're not saying I'm only going to vote for a non-believer.
Yeah, we never have that option.
No, we don't.
Well, maybe
we vote for believing Christians all the time.
Yeah, on values, on basic
right.
values. But maybe it's also because the secular leaders don't command the same kind of control over the flock like some of these big Pastor Warrens. Politicians imagine that these pastors can go out and just sort of order up the vote from their vast congregation.
Right.
And we can't do that as seculars.
Well, there's that. They have a very natural way to organize large numbers of people. And it's not just getting them to vote. It's getting them to donate. It's getting them to volunteer. And I think Obama is hoping, I mean, I don't want to, you know, speak for him. I don't know anything that anybody else doesn't know. But I think the hope is that by being kind of saying kind words and showing that you're a believer and you know the Bible and you're not just sort of putting it on to seem like you're religious when you're not, like when Howard Dean said his favorite book in the New Testament was the Book of Job. That was probably a mistake. So I think Obama is he's very conversant with religion. He's very religious. Fine. So I think he's hoping that he can just kind of make friends.
Well,
and they won't
we'll
hate
see.
Him.
We've been talking with
we'll
Kathy. We've been talking with Katha Pollitt, columnist of the Subject to Debate column in Nation magazine, about this troubling union of faith and politics. And you can find Katha's most recent books, Virginity or Death, or my favorite, Learning to Drive, which is just out in paperback, at all the better bookstores and at ffrf.org. Is there a new book in the works, possibly, Katha?
I have a book of poems that'll be coming out in June.
Great.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Katha.
Thank you so much for having me.
All of our past shows are archived and available for podcasting at ffrf.org/radio.
We thank our two wonderful guests today, Senator Ernie Chambers and Katha Pollitt. And next week we'll be talking with an attorney and unbeliever about what he did at the Democratic National Convention to promote separation of church and state. Tune in next week.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.